My name is Billy McKinley, Ballylogan. I was born in 1935. My family would be very much of an Ulster Scots background. I've done some research, or quite a lot of research, on the family, and we can trace it back to around 1800 to a Robert or Bab McKinley, who was then a tenant on the estate of the Marquess of Londonderry and resided in Ballylawn. He had three sons, William, James and John. And it is from the John McKinley that I am descended. John McKinley married a lady called Esther Dunn, who is the same Dunns that resided in the Rylands, where Ronald Crawford now has the farm. He has their farm. And they had again three sons, James, John and Robert William. The McKinleys only used four names in the male line down the ages: Robert, John, James and William, and that has led to quite a lot of confusion, as you can well imagine. James, my great-grandfather, he married Rebecca Parker from Ruske. And James actually died quite a young man. I think he was only 20 when he was married, but he died suddenly one Sunday afternoon after coming home from church here in Rye. And his wife, who became known as the Widow McKinley, and there's a field on the farm known as the Widow's Chair, because when you're looking across from the loch side, it looks like a chair, and it was known to the folk on the loch side as the Widow's Chair. And she lived on until the second half of the 1920s. They in turn had three sons: John and my grandfather, William, and Samuel, and three sons. Samuel also died fairly young, just I think a year after my great grandmother died in 27. And the farm then went to my grandfather, William. Now he, as a young man, married one of the Robinsons of Rye down here. The Robinsons, as you know, were people who had come in to replace the Montgomerys, who were of the sort of Protestant gentry, but had obviously got into some sort of debt, and they were evicted from Rye. And that there was, I think, that a certain amount of a stigma connected with the Robinsons for taking over the land. They came up from Artigarvan in Northern Ireland, and there was this sort of stigma connected, because to take over an evicted person was not regarded as a very nice act at that particular time, as you can well imagine. Yeah. My grandfather then emigrated to Canada, to Toronto. He worked in Eaton Stores, which was, of course, the place where nearly all the people from Northern Ireland and this area tended to head for. But at the outbreak of the First World War, he came home again to Donegal and joined the Ministry of Agriculture as a potato inspector, and served in Carndonagh, I think in Chrysla, and his longest stint, in actual fact, was in Newcastle in County Down. And then with the setting up of the Irish Free State, he gave up his job with the ministry and came back and bought back what the other half of our present farm, which then at that time belonged to a man called Nathan McConnell, who had inherited from his uncle James McKinley, who was sometimes known as Mad James McKinley. But there's the great story about Nathan never had very much money, and there was the rumour that although Mad James was found drowned in the Swallow, there were some of the locals who maintained all the days of their lives that Nathan dragged him down and threw him into the Swallow to get rid of him to get hold of the farm. How much truth there is in that, I do not know. I think in those days they didn't. There wasn't an inquest, but I think the foreman was a local man, I think, down from Ballyan, called Johnny Anderson. I don't think they took the matter too seriously, and that was that. But anyway, Nathan died in the round about 1920, and my grandfather, 1922, I think, bought the farm back again from the executors of the estate of Nathan McConnell. Nathan McConnell, in actual fact, was related anyway, because his mother was also one of the McKinleys, so that's how he got the farm in the first place. So the present farm dates to that as it now stands. My grandfather had two children, my father, John, or Jack, as he's always known, Jack McKinley of Ballylawn, and my aunt, who married Robert McCrossan here of Manor Cunningham, and later, of course, resided in Lifford. Robert is a brother of Sissy and Fred. Yeah, so there's a connection there as well. My father, he married Maud Duncan, who was the daughter of John Duncan, the principal of Ballyhean National School. John Duncan had come to this country from County Tyrone. I think he was in a small school down in Fannet, in Rossnakill, or some of those ones down there for a short period of time, and then he came to be the principal of Ballyhean National School, or Ballyhean School. He lodged with the Barnhills of Treharan, and in actual fact married one of the daughters, Jane Barnhill. So my maternal grandmother was one of the Barnhills of Treharan. John Duncan was a sort of infamous in this country, has been a mighty cross teacher indeed. The wee ones used to go around and had a rhyme, you know, about him. They said, "Master Duncan's a very good man. He goes to church on Sunday. He prays to God to give him strength to battle the wains on Monday." And battle them he did.
That was the origin of the day.
But my father and my mother, there were three children. Myself, who was the eldest, born in 1935, and Ronald, who was born in 1942 but died of diphtheria at the time of the epidemic in 1943, I think it was. He was just over a year old at the time. And then my brother, Samuel, who was born in 1946. So they were just the two surviving members of the family. My grandfather, Duncan, was also, in fact, related to President Woodrow Wilson of the United States, and my uncle, in actual fact, was called Robert Wilson Duncan, And I remember my aunt being in correspondence with the Wilson family in America when I was a wee boy. I used to go around to stay with her in Remelton. Her husband was a blacksmith out at the Clooney, and it brings back a lot of memories of the old way of living with the big open hearth fire and the big barrel load of turf put on in the evening. Blacksmiths were generally what we would call cold rifed, and they liked the heat, being used to it all day. And they got this big, and I remember the bread being baked in the pot oven hanging over the and the cinders being placed on the top of it and so on. I found it very, very interesting indeed, that sort of thing. The other thing I would probably like to say about the McKinleys of Ballylong, there was always a rumour that they were connected as well to President William McKinley in America. It was always said that the McKinleys came originally from Scotland. They first stopped over in County Antrim. One branch of them came here to Donegal, and the other one went to America. And certainly in America they used exactly the same names, because the president was William and his father was James. So you've got that. That was something I would like to probably do more research on, if at all possible. As for myself, the usual pattern, I attended Ballyhale National School for a while. Then when the war ended, I went to the model school in Derry, then to Foyle College, and then on to Queen's University. I completed my course there in 1957 and decided I would like to join the Colonial Education Service as a sort of an experiment. I was interviewed and I was offered a post in what was then Tanzania, in East Africa. But I never got to Tanzania, because about 3 weeks later, a very urgent letter arrived asking me would I be willing to take a post in what was then the Somaliland Protectorate in the Horn of Africa. I don't think that was just quite as fashionable a place as maybe Tanganyika was at that particular time. But I decided I would take it. And that was something, an actual fact, that I never regretted, because it turned out to be a very, very interesting post indeed. I didn't really realise what the implications were when the outline of the post was very sketchy when I received it. But when I arrived there, I discovered that what had happened was that a school had been set up 4 years earlier, and the first pupils had just graduated from it, and the remit there was to educate the future leaders of the country. Quite a daunting task for someone straight from university, as you can well imagine. And fortunately, the headmaster there, who was from a very, very different background, I must say, from me, he was Harrow in Cambridge, and mind you, Manor Cunningham and Belfast were just maybe a different field altogether. But curiously, we got on terribly well together, and we became very, very close friends over the years, and remained very close friends until he passed away about 2 years ago. And just a year later, they decided they would build a brand new secondary school for 200 boarders at a place called Sheikh. And it turned out no money was spared on it, in actual fact. And it really was a really lovely the school, really loved the school to work in, because we were taking the top pupils from all the intermediate schools. And there I remained. It was opened in 1960. The country became independent in 1960. We were invited to stay on in the school, and we remained there for another 11 years, and probably would have stayed longer had it not been for a military coup, Russian-inspired military coup, which had overthrown the civilian government. And we discovered in 1971 that the local military commander was taking maybe a rather unsavoury interest in what was going on in the school, and we decided that maybe it was time for us to cut our stick and get out. So I came back. We came back here in 1971, took up farming, decided I wouldn't maybe like to teach here after being sort of, maybe, dare I say, near the top of the profession, because I'd risen to the rank of senior education officer and advisor to the government. So it was going to be something very different here in this country. So I went back to farming with my father and brother. My father, he died very suddenly in 1976. So the two of us then continued to run the farm to the present day. I like the animal side of it. I think it used to be very much a mixed farm, like everyone. Yeah. Everyone grew potatoes and turnips and barley and oats and so on. But we gradually phased out the other crops and went into the cattle side of things.
You must have teaching. Or did you miss it at that time?
You missed it for a while, but it really was a clean break then from what... it was two very different things.
Yeah.
I suppose coming from a teaching background and a farming background.
The weather would have been different too, Billy, wouldn't it?
Very, very different. The climate was very, very different. We were very fortunate in that we were about 4,500 feet up on the edge of the escarpment. Down on the Red Sea coast, very, very hot indeed. And I remember being down one day when the temperature was 113. The maximum temperature up where we were was about 90. You know, roughly around that. But the air was so dry.
Yeah.
I mean, you would feel far warmer here at 70 than you would at 90 in that particular type of climate. Very arid.
Yeah.
It's about 6 months in the year, you got no rain at all.
Wouldn't be very green.
No. And then the rain, when it did come, came in great big downpours,
like
very heavy thundery showers, and then everything just
washed away.
Could be nearly washed away. Yes. I remember the heaviest rainfall I think we ever recorded at the school was four and a quarter inches in an hour and a half. That is a very, very heavy month's rainfall here in the
just a couple of hours.
And an hour and a half, it was absolutely, it was nearly frightening actually, the severity of the thunder and lightning that was along with it. But otherwise it was a very interesting life. Very simple, very isolated, no shops.
No shops?
No shops. The nearest shop was about 75 miles away.
And what did you do for provisions?
You either sent an order to the regional capital, which was about 110 miles away, or down to a shop on the coast, down at a place called Berbera. And you got a month's supply or whatever. Mm-hmm. And Hargeisa Club used to get in fresh food like sausages and butter and bacon and so on. And if someone was coming up to the school from it, it was always their duty to bring a consignment, you know, for you.
Yeah.
And then we kept them in the fridge and
so on. Do you have your own milk?
powdered milk we tended to use. The local milk always tasted of smoke, because the ladies had always the job in the Somali society of milking the cows.
Yes.
To disinfect the milking pans, they smoked them over the fire.
Oh,
and milk and the tea from it always tasted, as you can well imagine, of soot or smoke. I didn't like it. But we had, otherwise, the meat wasn't at all bad. You had got sheep, and you had got the little goat. Now, the leg of the goat was very, very, very good indeed.
Yeah.
And the cooks were good. You hadn't to do any cooking yourself.
Yeah,
yeah, the cooks were very...
What was the social life like there?
Non-existent. Occasionally, in later years, the United States Information Service used to bring felons and so on up to the school. And curiously enough, the man in charge of it was the brother of Telly Savalas, you know, Kojak.
Yes.
And he was called Gus Savalas, a great big hunk of a Greek-American. My colleague in actual fact, all I'll say is that my colleague married a Somali girl, one of my colleagues.
Yes.
And they live very happily in London, at the present time. But it was a Muslim society, completely Muslim.
Yes.
Yeah.